Good evening. I'd like to call to order the October 2nd, 2012 meeting of the Tompkins County Legislature. Join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge of Allegiance to the United States of America, and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call members. Mr. Robison?
Here.
Mr. Shinagawa is asked to be excused. Mr. Stein?
Here.
Mr. Burbank?
Here.
Ms. Chalk is asked to be excused. Mr. Dennis?
Here.
And Ms. Ferreira has asked to be excused. Ms. Kiefer?
Here.
Mr. Lane?
Here.
Ms. McAtee?
Present.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne will be a few minutes late. Mr. McKenna?
Here.
Mr. Proto?
Here.
Ms. Pryor?
Here.
Ms. Robertson?
Here.
We have 11 members present. Thank you. Proclamations, petitions, communications, and notices. Communications are on the desk. I will be reordering the motions today, the resolutions for consideration to try to accommodate the members of the public and our staff who are here. So the order that you see on the agenda is going to be changed. There is one thing we know for sure. The Resolution D, the bond resolution related to the courthouse, was actually not considered by capital plan. It was considered by budget, so that'll go under Jim under your report then, Resolution D. All right. Thank you. With that, I'd like to invite members of the public to speak. You have 3 minutes, and Kathy here will hold up the sign and let you know how you're doing on your time limit. First, I have Margaret Corbett and then Lee Hafley. Yeah, please identify yourself and where you live.
My name is Margaret Corbett. I'm a resident of the town of Danby. I've lived there for 39 years in the same place. I live at the end of a dead-end road. I make my living as an online educator developing new internet technology, educational resources for museums and federal programs. I worked for 20 years at the Cornell Theory Center before going off on my own 3 years ago, and I've been working out of my house. I have been online since there was an online, beginning in 1993 or 4 and 5, and dial-up from my home, required for work. I have watched my ability to participate in that from my home remain static over the course of time while network access expanded all over the county. There are currently two proposals before the board for endorsement, not for approval, from a wireless internet service provider that will cover most of the county, five out of six towns or whatever the number was. And there is another proposal for bringing cable internet to a limited number of households in the county. There's been a lot of discussion over the last month about whether or not these proposals necessarily need to be mutually exclusive of each other. And I think that the assumption that this is true does a disservice to those of us who are likely to be in jeopardy of not receiving adequate service from the wireless solution. The reason being that the topography in several parts, at least in the southern end of the county, is rolling hills, and we have no guarantee that adequate towers will be installed to rise above the trees and the topography and then come into and through the trees at our homesteads. Mine is in a wooded site to give me adequate service. Fiber optic wire, on the other hand, would come directly to my home. I would connect to it, and I would have arguably somewhat better internet access, if not equivalent, with the wireless. We have a small neighborhood. I think I counted 25 houses that are actually in the Spencer School District, Spencer phone, Spencer mail, and we have been asking Haefely TV to serve us with cable for years, for 10 years. I had to bring my daughter into Cornell to get her on the internet when she was in high school so she could do her college applications.
Could you finish up, please?
So I'm requesting that the board endorse both proposals. I have no problem with qualifying language on the Haefely proposal, acknowledging the fact that it only serves a portion of the community. Thank you for giving me the chance to talk.
Thank you. Lee Haefely, and then Jeff Golden.
Hello, I'm Lee Haefely from Haefely TV, and we have the proposal for Enfield, parts of Danby, parts of Caroline, and we're especially interested in Enfield and that lower end of Danby, the South Danby Road, as Margaret Corbett said. Questions about whether wireless can work its thick trees. In Enfield, we have a proposal to serve almost all the homes. We figure at least 98% will have service when we complete, and it's fiber optic direct to the home. It's the highest quality service available. Really, anything else is second best. And we know that the broadband committee of the county has just recommended the wireless service, and we'd like to be included also. We realize Caroline, we didn't get a high percentage of the homes. We're maybe a standby for that. If we're the last man standing, we'd be the best option there. Enfield and South Danby, we are the best option. So we're requesting endorsement of the county. Thank you.
Thank you. Jeff Golden and then Ted Crane.
Good evening. My name is Jeff Golden. I'm also with Haefely TV. And I guess at this point I'm just an addendum to Lee's statements. I would like to make it clear that from our point of view in our conversations with the state that there has been no conversation about exclusivity of endorsement. In this case it would be giving a starving man a choice, if you will, between meals rather than just feeding him. If the county is unserved or a town is unserved, the state doesn't seem to have a problem with those residents looking for an all-of-the-above sort of approach to whatever their option might be. In the town of Caroline, there's approximately 500 homes unserved. Our grant would knock out something on the order of 285 of those. Though that's not everything, that is a natural, realistic growth for us, one that can be done. Fiber to the optic would be delivered to each of those houses should they be interested in doing so. Lee already pointed out Enfield. So really all I'd like to say is, in this case, we don't particularly see this as really a bone of contention. Rather that there's nothing suggesting that two grants would not be relevant. We'd also like a shot at the grant. I appreciate that the county is looking for a comprehensive solution, which is laudable. In this case, we don't offer you a comprehensive solution. We don't offer all of the towns, but we do offer what we can. So if the situation here is such that many people are unserved, I'm not really sure that turning down any offers to serve some of those people best serves those residents. I am a resident of the city of Ithaca, for what it's worth. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jeff. Ted Crane and then Karen Edelstein.
Hi, I'm Ted Crane. I live in the town of Danby. I've been fortunate to have very good internet service because I pay hundreds of dollars a month for it. I've had it since way back. Unfortunately, what used to be a really great service 10 years ago is now subpar. It's not even broadband. It's not even DSL. It's not even cable. It's nothing. But it still costs me hundreds of dollars a month, and that's all I can get. So I would urge you, if I were standing here on another situation, to say, do anything you can to bring broadband to Tompkins County, to all of Tompkins County. Luckily, I'm not asking you to spend money just to endorse a proposal that will do that, that will bring, with luck, internet to all of Tompkins County or very close to it. Now, it happens that I sat in on most of the broadband committee meetings, and I have to say it was one of the most pleasurable experiences. There was no arguments. There were no personal agendas where people are pushing things. Where they're trying to convince people to reach a decision that nobody else liked. In fact, it was a very wonderful situation in general. About the only thing I can remember where a question was raised where a couple of heads were shaking and wondering about things was when someone asked, is there any possible, you know, it's more radio waves in the air. Is there any possible problem from that? And that was a couple of months ago. And at the time I went and said, this is something that's worth looking at. I'm not a doctor. I don't play one on TV. But I can use the internet as well as anybody, so went looking. And I found this, here, I'm going to pass this around if you don't mind. I found something relevant from the World Health Organization, which more or less said the kind of the strength of radio signals that are being used in wireless internet are so far below other signals, and so far below, whether it's 2% or 0.0002, you might read that in there, tiny fraction of it, that it really isn't, it's a negligible amount. And what's more, actually I heard one of the earlier speakers talking about possible interference due to topography and trees and whatnot. In fact, you're being sort of faced with an either-or situation. Trees block radio signals because they contain water. People block radio signals because they contain water. Either the trees do block the signals or the people don't block them. It's neither here nor there. If the radio can penetrate the trees, it'll penetrate people without any harmful effects. Anyway, that's what I had to say. I do urge you to approve what proposal from Clarity.
Thanks very much, Ted. Karen Edelstein and then Claire Perez.
Good evening. Very much like Margaret, I live in a very rural area, that last mile where internet service does not really penetrate very well. I work from home as a consultant, and on a good day, I get a little bit better than dial-up speed through my BlackBerry. That's my internet. I often have to drive 5 to 10 miles to get internet service in order to send large files. My concern about having two different companies who are vying for what seems to be the same size pie, I may be wrong about that, is that both companies will get less if the pie is only dividable so many ways. And so what I would just urge the legislature to consider is the company, which I believe is Clarity Connect, which has a broader reach to more communities and more penetration, that at least the company that has the greatest reach be considered first, and then if there is any money left over to allow for additional penetration into the rural areas, that be considered secondarily. Thank you.
Thanks, Karen. Claire Perez, and if anybody else would like to speak, you can go to the mic after Claire.
Okay. Can you hear me? Okay. I'm supporting the current grant proposal that includes Clarity Connect. Clarity Connect provides the greatest amount of service, I believe, according to the proposal, to the greatest number of people at an affordable price. In my reading and blogging over the last year and a half, I discovered many different projects exist in communities across the country, and that leads to less effective rural broadband coverage. I wrote a piece about it called 1,000 Points of Disconnected Light in 2011. Clarity Connect is a fixed wireless service which was researched by the Tompkins County Broadband Committee. It has the opportunity for upgrades with a pre-existing infrastructure. Our prior service did not provide any of the benefits that we recently received with Clarity Connect. Clarity Connect currently provides for two-thirds the cost. We get 3 megabits down and 2 megabits per second up, and that's the lower package. In our previous service, we were not guaranteed 1 megabyte down, making the modern-day internet useless to us. We tried for several years to get the local wire service for cable TV and broadband. This included phone calls, research, constant surveys that always showed our cost of providing service to us in the thousands. We were 0.6 miles from a connection. If you are the home left out of the cabling loop, regardless of provider, it is hard to convince anyone that you should be included. Clarity Connect is currently providing an excellent service to us. My husband is able to update his computers. He has a LAN. He uses Steam, a special computer gaming site, accesses jazz music that we have not been able to get, follows the Syrian conflict in more detail, finds the information he needs to support all his different computer applications, and streams videos through Netflix. I have been able to update my Ithaca College student internet site, access videos to preview for class, download student papers to grade, and upload PowerPoints and other materials. In addition, it is much easier and faster to blog with upload photographs and read other people's material.
Claire, did you identify where you live? I'm sorry.
Uh-huh.
Where you live?
I live on Route 34B, 707 Prouville South Lansing Road.
Okay, thank you. Would anyone else like to address the legislature? All right, thank you very much. We will get to the broadband resolution, but we do have a couple of very interesting and important presentations I'm sure you'll really want to learn from if you stay. I also have next on the agenda the opportunity for municipal officials to speak. Rick, would you like to address the legislature? Rick is the supervisor of the town of Danby.
Thank you all. There's a bunch of things that this broadband, I really can't believe in the last 5 years how this subject has gone around from something that was fairly ho-hum to something that's really, really something. I'm really impressed by... in this day and age when there's so much negativity about government and how governments function, I tell you, this process of working with people and committees, I know maybe it's because I maybe like crossword puzzles because I'm weird, but this whole thing with broadband and the way it's received, the support it's received, and the kind of in work amongst different people and sharing of information, Ted said it, and now I'll say it again, it really has been a very wonderful experience to be able to interact with you all and to really put something together. I think we really have a shot at this one, and way to go, everybody. Thank you.
Anything else from the town of Danby? Is that all you guys
I emailed you earlier about the money for our water district. We're hot on that subject, and so that takes us up to present moment. I thank you.
Don't go away. Are there any questions for Rick? This is what we do, Rick. With municipal, are there any questions? I'm sorry, you may not come back again. I'm sorry, Ben.
Any questions? Anything at all?
Great.
I do think that in my, I sort of nicknamed it South Amazing. My phone, Rick.
I haven't talked to most of the supervisors that south of sort of the border. I think all of us, and like has been said here before, that whatever plan can try to serve the most people here, once you have this kind of thing, it's just impossible to imagine living without it. And so, again, there's some real important components. The education component, I think, is really wonderful. The connections, the way that the whole program, Clarity Connect, is putting together in order to be able to sell the product. I mean, we're not just looking at a particular, person who's filling out a grant application. You're really talking about a member of the community, understands the community, is working in such sensitive ways with people. And I think it'd just be a total asset, such a total change from the typical Time Warner corporate view, to try to bring things down to a little bit more home, a little bit more personable, something you can actually talk to and resolve things with. So I hope this all goes well, and again, thank you for your time. Glad to answer any more questions you have for me.
All right. Frank, and then Peter.
Madam Chair, as long as we have Rick trapped, can we have him stick around and give the municipal official?
Well, that's
report?
What I'm asking him for,
but I don't think he understands.
No, I didn't understand.
We have a spot on our agenda for a municipal official to talk about anything they want to.
Isn't that what I'm doing?
Yes.
Is that what you want to do?
That was the prompt, and I got a sense he just wanted to talk about broadband and a little bit the water district, but yeah.
I've never known you to be shy about talking about anything.
Well, I mean, yeah, there's things to do, though, so.
Thank you.
Don't wait. Peter, Rick, don't go away. Peter, go ahead. Rick, Peter has a question for you.
Rick, a question.
I know our procedures look old-fashioned, stupid, and absurd, but anyway, that's the way it goes. I've been listening to the what everyone said over here, and what everyone says sounds absolutely correct, from the first person who spoke to the last. There's only one question, and that's a question that nobody has addressed, namely, are these two proposals in conflict with each other or not? I haven't got the vaguest notion. If the answer to that is yes, I'll vote one way. If the answer to that is no, then I'll vote the other way. And I feel that it would be nice to hear both sides of that issue discussed. Maybe that will be discussed in the future, but that's what I'm waiting to hear.
Well,
you got any response to
yes,
that?
Yes, I do. I'm avoiding your question like a good politician. I think that the answer for me is not that question as much as it is the question of, like, which proposal is going – I mean, I'll just speak for my town. Which proposal is going to reach more residents in my town? And, they're both excellent proposals. Don't get me wrong. You know, I don't have any problem with the product. I don't have any problem with the service. I don't have any of that. It's the fact of why would I vote for something that's only going to serve 28 people if I have 400 people that want it, and I can get it to 380 of them. I mean, it's for me, and I do think that that's true basically all over the county. You have a choice. If you want the cheapest, most efficient way to get high-speed internet, not talking about phone or TV, but if you want to get people connected, this is the cheapest product, the cheapest, most affordable product.
This, you keep saying this. Which one, Rick?
Clarity Connect.
Okay.
Sorry.
So can I just make a quick response?
Were you finished?
Yeah. Right, but your assumption is that, I mean, if they're in conflict with each other,
no,
what you say is obvious, but if they're not, then it comes to another conclusion. And I guess that's what I'd like to hear from somebody is why they're not in conflict. So that's all I have to say.
Okay, Jim and then Pat.
Yes, and Peter, I think your question can be answered when we get to the resolution, and a discussion of it now is not the appropriate time. So
okay.
Pat, me off the hook.
May I give a quick 10-second response, Peter?
Thank you, Jim.
The two proposals are overlapping, so there is, in that sense, a conflict between the two. What the Haefely TV proposes to cover would also be covered in the Clarity proposal. The Clarity proposal covers a much bigger section of the county.
Okay. Thank you, Rick. Appreciate it. Legislative privilege of the floor. Jim.
Totally away from any of this. I have a copy of the Cornell sports schedule. Any soccer fans? The Big Red are 9-0, and I don't think they've been 9-0 at the beginning of the season since 1853. Is actually, and it's a great team. They got a great coach, and no one goes to the games except family members. So, and I don't have anybody on the team, but it's fun to go, and I think people ought to go up there and watch it.
Thank you, Jim. Frank.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have two items for you. First, it's not new news, but since the Journal reported it yesterday, it probably makes it official. The Farm Bill hasn't gone anywhere, and some of us have reported that to you over the last 2 months, that it probably wasn't going to go anywhere. The concern is the economic impact on agriculture in the entire state, particularly with the effort that the governor is making to bring to make New York the yogurt capital of the U.S. So if you have any influence with our federally elected individuals, this is the time to use it, because it will be an interim session, and you'll have to let your conscience be your guide as to whether or not you want to support a temporary extension, or you'd like a full-blown farm bill, as some of us that are in that field would like. The second item is my consumer alert, the periodic consumer alert. In a conversation with Rick Dietrich earlier today, Rick mentioned to me that there's going to be a meeting with regard to the cable franchise group in the county, that the towns are coming together for that meeting. With that in mind, some of us received a letter from Time Warner indicating that there's going to be a change in some of their cable TV lineup. They're pulling some of the stations and putting them in a different category. And you will need digital access in order to access those stations. Or if you have analog, you can get for a short time a free gizmo that helps you access that. That free box will eventually cost you 99 cents a month. I'm going back a couple of years when the FCC announced that there wasn't going to be any impact on individuals with analog TVs. This was simply an opportunity for cable TV companies to upgrade their systems. And don't worry, anyone with an analog system wasn't going to have to rush out and can their system. The impact would not affect them. Well, I just want to alert you that that's not where we're going. I think the entire effort is to move everyone towards digital eventually. And at that time, this is about 2.5-3 years ago, there was quite an article in, of all places, the Ithaca Journal about it. There are people who don't want to give up their analog TVs and also don't want to rush out and have to incur the cost of purchasing a new TV in order to access television. So I don't know if it would be an appropriate discussion at this meeting Rick alerted me to, but I think some of us ought to get on the FCC to make sure that this isn't the direction that some of our residents want to take this in, and it certainly wasn't the direction we were told the FCC would take us in. Thank you.
Thank you, Frank. Mike.
Frank, that meeting that's going to be sponsored by the TCOG group for the cable group, in which we're going to ask people to come out and talk about their cable service, is going to be on November 1st, and it's going to be at the Ithaca Town Hall at 7 o'clock p.m. So you might want to put that on your calendars and come on out and tell us about issues that have to do with cable TV. It's not broadband we're talking about. We're talking about cable TV at this meeting.
November 1st, Mike?
November 1st, yes.
Thanks.
Was that 7 o'clock, Mike?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. Anyone else?
Can I just... Yeah. What I really wanted to talk about was something which is... We talked about all last year, and that's the state mandates. Right now, all the counties are in budget work, and we're starting to hear reports all over the state about how much trouble counties are in due to the tax cap and the failure of the state to relieve the high cost of mandates, particularly for Medicaid, health insurance, pensions, and other things. Right now, Essex County is facing a $13 million deficit. St. Lawrence County is looking at a 20% tax increase. The Westchester County officials, including the Republican county executive, Bob Astorino, had a press conference in which they used the word that what has happened between the tax cap and the failure of mandate relief is nothing short of a state scam. And I think that is not too strong a word, because I think it really is. It's offering something to the property taxpayer, saying we're trying to protect you at the state level. But what they're really doing is forcing counties to dig deep into reserves and cut back on services just to support the mandated requirements that New York State will not accept as its responsibility. So just keep your ear to the ground. Thank heavens Tompkins County has been recognizing this, and we've had good leadership in the budgeting area. We aren't looking at the huge deficits that some of the other counties are that complied to the letter with the tax cap. And I think that's a good reason for us to, as we proceed with the expanded budget committee, to think about how is this going to affect us in years to come. maybe we, because the state doesn't seem to have any indication this year of wanting to do anything different with that tax cap. In fact, the governor was on TV not very long ago patting himself on the back about that 80% of the municipalities had complied with the tax cap, and only 20% of the, and that includes the school districts, I should say. That's nice. But how are we, what are we going to what's going to happen this year? What's going to happen next year? And I'm not a person that supports a high tax levy increase, but I know that when we have union contracts, we have the cost of fuel, we have the cost of police cars and everything else that we have to do, social services programs, we have to be able to pay for those because our people expect it. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mike. Jim, did I see your hand again? Okay. Anyone else?
Martha?
Yeah?
Would you permit one, reminded by something Mike
said?
Sure. One more bite at the apple. Tax cap. Those of us that live in the Ithaca City School District were treated in the last day or so to our school tax bills.
Mm-hmm.
Victims of the law of unintended consequences, and Mike reminded me of it when he mentioned the tax cap. Some of our residents qualify for the enhanced STAR exemption, and this county has made an exceedingly good effort to keep seniors in their own homes and try to be a little sensitive to, and we sponsor a lot of programs that do that. When the state passed the tax cap, inadvertently they also capped the STAR exemption. So people are not being able to enjoy what they may qualify in one category for. They may get blitzed by having to pay a higher tax because of the tax cap on the enhanced STAR. And if you want a more exact and professional explanation than I just gave, I suggest you call Jay Franklin at the County Assessor's Office. Thank you.
Thank you, Frank. All set? Thank you all. I'd like to invite Dale Schumacher and Patrick Doty of Learning Web to come on up. We're very pleased to have this presentation on the independent living survey that's been done. I think this is the third survey, Dale?
The third one, yes.
The third survey. So, welcome. Thanks so much for coming. So if one of you wants to sit down, and you've got a microphone there as well.
Is where you can hear me here? Okay, good evening. I've never been accused of being so very soft that people can't hear me with or without a microphone. I'm going to take just a few minutes because the survey and the results of the survey that we've done would take an hour to an hour and a half to clearly go through all of it. But I wanted to hit some of the high points. As the chair has mentioned, this is the third survey that we've done. We've basically done the survey every 4 years. It's a unique survey in the sense that it's a true community and university partnership, including Cornell, the Learning Web, the county's Youth Services Department, and the county's Continuum of Care. It's also, I believe, very unique in the sense that the major researchers in this project are youth themselves, and they indeed, I will say, go on the streets and interview other youths to gather all of the data. Now, why do we do this? There are several reasons. One, of course, is that we need information and data in order to plan, and the continuum of care needs to work to gather some of that data. Certainly, the method that's put forth for the continuums of care throughout the nation to use generally undercount all of the homeless youth. The second issue is homelessness and youth homelessness itself. A year ago, when the Heath Act was passed at the federal level, it redefined in some ways what homelessness is, and it tended to include youth more in that definition. It didn't do an awful lot in terms of revising the way in which we count them. It also, however, allowed Washington to come up with a notion that within 10 years, homelessness will be defeated. There will be no more homelessness in the nation. but that it were so, or would be so. I would have to say, and this is perhaps somewhat personal, homelessness quite often is more of a symptom than indeed a problem that we're going to quickly solve. I think we as a nation, certainly we as a county and communities, need to drill down and look at some of the base causes and find out how can we put some effort there in terms of jobs, in terms of some disenfranchised families, and so on. But I'm not here to get on that soapbox at all. Another important reason for our doing this survey is that the data is so necessary as we go outside of the area looking for funding at the state level and at the federal level. And I'll have to say that Tompkins County, and I'll boast, the Learning Web has been very successful in getting grants because we're generating some real research and real data that shows our need. In terms of housing, one of the major questions of our survey, we found that we asked, how many places have you lived for homeless youth over the past year? And what we found is that just over 83% have lived in two or more places throughout the course of the year. And I pause a moment so we can all think about that. A few years ago, I moved twice in 2 years. It was traumatic, packing up, finding where I was going to live, all that goes with it. And some of these young people are moving several times in 1 year, sometimes several times in 1 month as they couch surf. We also then, currently in your housing situation, we asked the youth that were surveyed, how do you feel? How safe are you? And we look at our results and we say, 60% of the youth said that they feel safe all the time. And again, I pause for a moment and say, my estimation of the world is that my home is my castle. It's my safe haven. I feel safe pretty close to 100% of the time in my living situation. And here we're showing 40% don't. Actually, 5% were saying they don't feel safe any of the time in their current living situation. We then were at, we asked.
I'm dangerous.
All right, I'm sorry. We asked what were the reasons for leaving home, and you can indeed see the results. And what this helps us to do is really set aside and break up that stereotype that many hold that homeless youth are homeless because of something that they have done, some behavior on their part. Indeed, sometimes it is behavior on the part of a youth, but often it's dysfunctional families, it's that they were asked to leave, conflict with parents, abusive home situations, drug abuse on the part of parents in the homes, and young people are somewhat forced to leave. We are also very curious, of course, about education and employment. In terms of education, while nearly 60% of the young people have finished high school or gained their GED, there's another 40% that haven't. Now, indeed, 40% of that group is still in school, but 24% are dropouts. And I think we all know around this room how closely it correlates a good education and employment and success in that area in the future. And then in terms of employment status, the figures are outstandingly poor. 60% of the youth that were surveyed identified as being unemployed, and only 40% were working. That's rather drastic. Now, indeed, there are some education issues, but just as importantly, specific to Tompkins County, is the competition for jobs. Many of the entry-level jobs are held by people not only with high school diplomas, but also with college degrees. And the youth that are homeless without those things are competing for the same work. We also were very curious about hunger and food security. We certainly, through our youth outreach program, feed a lot of youth in a lot of different ways. But in surveying 225 homeless youth, we found that 40% report skipping a meal because they don't have the money for food. and 27% reported not eating for a whole day. And of those that reported not eating or skipping a meal, about 50% of those were doing that on a weekly basis. These are even youth who had entry-level jobs, such as a fast food restaurant at, you know, 20 or 25 hours a week, as well as the use of food stamps. Then we ask, what are your current needs? And many of you, I think, remember hearing from us several years ago and then several years before that. The needs have pretty much stayed the same. They've changed position a little bit in the focus of each survey, but these young people need to find housing. They need better transportation, which I will say the first survey had an effect on improving transportation in the TCAT schedules and routing and so on several years ago. They need help finding a job, and they need help with education or further training. Those seem to be the top issues each time that we conducted the survey. Then we asked, and I paused for a minute to say that there are some other questions that we asked, but to keep my presentation somewhat brief, I left those out. I think all of you have a copy of the actual results of the survey, and, you know, we're a phone call away if you want more information. But then we asked, what are your goals for the future? And we've captured here some of the actual quotes from young people that took the survey. And as you read through them, it's pretty obvious. They're the exact same goals that I had many years ago and that most of us in this room had a couple of years ago. Certainly the goals that my own children have. We all want to have a nice home. We all want to have a family. We want to have a job. We want to be self-sufficient. We want to make our way in the world. And we always like to share this idea because sometimes we think, oh, these homeless young people, we have that stereotype, remember? Oh, these homeless young people, they all must want to go out and be rocket scientists, no, movie stars or musicians and rock stars and make all this money and have a great life. And there's always, in our eyes quite often as adults, that drug scene out there. Our survey really, really shoots holes in a lot of that stereotype, which is important for me at least in thinking. And then, of course, we always ask, what do you want the people in power to know? I think actually the voices of the youth tell us more than any report that I can certainly give. So I invited as my partner in this presentation, Patrick Doty, to share some of his ideas. Patrick's been in our programs. He's a shining star. I can't say enough good things about him, but then he'll blush and I don't want to do that. So.
Good evening. My name is Patrick Doty. First of all, I would like to thank you for giving me the opportunity to share with you a brief portion of my life story and the impact of the Learning Web Youth Outreach Program. This program provided me with the tools and support I needed to accomplish my long and short-term goals. Just about 4 years ago, my life was spinning quicker out of control than you or I could ever believe. I lost my mother, who was my only support. I was in felony drug court for criminal possession of marijuana with the intent to sell and was driving illegally daily. But did that stop me? No. I continued to sell large amounts of marijuana to support myself. This is what I learned at a young age. Sell this, support yourself easily, so I did so. I violated probation after less than 4 months in and was sent to a military-style boot camp called SHOC. SHOC and the Youth Outreach Program saved my life. SHOC taught me the tools I needed to succeed, and the Learning Web gave me the foundation to start a life I only dreamed of. All I did while on parole was worry about how I was going to support myself legally while couch surfing, filling out job application after job application. If it wasn't for the support I received from the Youth Outreach Program, giving me the motivation and confidence to stay on the right path and be successful, I would have given up, stopped going to cars, stopped checking in with the learning web, and gone back to a lifestyle I now despise. It's hard enough being a young adult, but a young adult with very little or no family support and no place to live without any hope of good things to come is far worse. I eventually was hired at the Country Club of Ithaca, where I devoted all my time and effort into working my way up from the bottom as a dishwasher to one of the top three servers employed there. Shortly after, I was accepted into the Learning Web housing program and since have restored my license, own a stable car, was employed full-time, and have legal money saved and planning on going to college for business. Look forward to pursuing a real estate degree as well, and was even able to take time off of work to participate in classes focusing on money management, credit, debt, and much more at the Alternatives Federal Credit Union and Cornell Cooperative Extensions. I no longer worry about where am I going to stay and will never have to. I managed to save enough money for a first, last, and security deposit, also extra because of this program. As a matter of fact, by participating in the IDA programs at Alternatives and help from INHS, I now own my own home. 5 years ago, I would have never agreed to meet you here. Do you know how blessed I am to be here in front of you, talking about my success rather than pleading my case in front of a judge and hoping for the best? My mother was only around to see the downfall of her son, but if she was here today, she would be thanking you more than you could ever imagine. Not only am I, but my family is now proud of me for all the right reasons, and I have you and the outreach to thank for this. Not only for giving me financial relief and housing, but the support of the case managers in this program deserve recognition as well, for they put up with a lot of troubled adults who just need a little direction to make a significant impact in their lives and their future. I am now done with this program, but will always remain a familiar face in their office. Thank you all for giving me my second chance.
Thank you, Pat. I think the results of our survey, I think Pat's testimonial indeed go a long ways, at least in my heart, to show that this work is good. And certainly the support of the county is, we can't thank you enough. It's certainly well appreciated so that we can continue doing this. Now, I'm a realist, too. Does every young person end up being a taxpayer? No. Eventually, we hope so. But for everyone that doesn't, probably two or three do. So thank you all. Have a great evening.
Thank you, Pat.
Thank you so much. Don't go away.
Oh, yeah.
I'm so moved. Thank you, Patrick. Thank you, Amy Hendricks. The Youth Services Department is very supportive and involved in this proposal, this survey as well. Is Sally still out there? Sally Schwartz back from Learning Web. Thank you very much. There's not much more to add, but I wonder if anybody has questions. Leslie.
I don't have a question, but I have a comment. Thanks, gentlemen, Sally, and everyone at the Learning Web. I had the opportunity to see the presentation of the survey and to engage in some dialogue a month or so ago, I don't remember when, and I want to encourage all of my colleagues to please take the time to read it. I remember when we had the very first one presented to us, at least during my time in the legislature a few years ago, and knowing that one of the young ladies who was involved in that, like Patrick, the success story, she, you know, was an employee. She became an employee here at the county, and one of the biggest issues for her was transportation, you know, not having a place to live and having to go far out and then finding a way to get into town to the jobs that are available and to see how it worked out. So it is very interesting to read and know that when we make those votes and when we decide where to put monies, although we know we have to stretch things far, that we make a significant impact on the lives of people like Patrick and many others who are not able to stand here today to tell us about their story. So
thanks for doing this this survey, for continuing to share with us what's going on with young people in our lives, as opposed to they're just a bunch of bad people sitting out on the commons and elsewhere getting into trouble. Many of them don't have places to go.
Thank you, Leslie. Frank?
Thanks, Martha. As chairman of the Health and Human Services Committee, Amy, thanks. Dale, I hope you pin Patrick down and make him a peer counselor. And Patrick, because I worked with your mother on a couple of different projects, believe me, she would be very proud of you. Thanks.
Anyone else? Dale, would you be able to email the slideshow to us? It's a good summary. And I would like to know, since this is the third survey, do you see any kind of trends? I mean, you know, from the first one in 2003.
I don't know if so we see trends.
The microphone, please. Okay.
Excuse my back.
That's
I don't know as though we see trends as much as recurring themes. Yeah. Young people in our community are struggling to do what's right. They're struggling to make good. Do they make mistakes? Yes. Do they have the support that I had growing up where a mistake wasn't so costly? No. So the trend that I see is that the problems aren't going away, but that's not what we address. We address the symptom, which is homelessness, in terms of our youth outreach program. I don't know if that's an answer.
But that's good. All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Again, thank you for coming. Patrick?
My pleasure. Thank you for having me. Thanks.
All right. If we can switch gears a little bit. And we have a second presentation tonight by the Planning Department. So, Joan, are you up?
Okay. I want to thank you for the opportunity to come here tonight, and Leslie and I will be sharing a presentation on the Development Focus Areas Strategy and the Conservation Strategy. You should have received copies of those documents weeks ago. If you've had a chance to look through them, we're just going to give you a very big overview. In 15 minutes, it's kind of hard to cover both, but we will do our best to cover the highlights for you. The Development Focus Areas Strategy is based on the recommendations in the comprehensive plan that was adopted by the legislature. And it really focuses on one of the principles in that plan, which was that development patterns in the future should reflect the existing pattern of development in terms of our villages, hamlets, and the city, downtown areas, and neighborhoods being the structure we follow into the future. And the Development Focus Area Strategy took that concept from the Comprehensive Plan and laid out in a little bit more detail how this can be accomplished. It also directly or indirectly addresses several of the other policies in the Comprehensive Plan, including the strengthening and enhancing of the city, villages, and hamlets, increasing the amount of housing and business in the central business districts, concentrating new development in existing developed areas, and preserving and protecting the rural character of Tompkins County. Building vibrant and sustainable communities can be achieved by focusing most new development in compact mixed-use communities. We've termed these development focus areas, and they will include places where people can live, work, learn, play, shop, and access services. Key, however, is that they need to be walkable in size and in design. A general rule of thumb is that people are willing to walk 5 to 10 minutes to run an errand or walk to school or catch a bus, but for any greater distance, they start being much more inclined to drive places. So a 10-minute walk roughly translates into a half-mile distance for people. So when we start looking at mapping areas and development focus areas, we started building around the idea of half-mile radius circles. There's a lot of benefits to having really focused development in the community. People are encouraged to walk by placing shopping, services, and housing in close proximity to one another. This helps make the streets and public spaces and pedestrian-oriented retail places really places where people meet and shop and gather and talk to their neighbors. Enhancing this kind of neighborhood activity also boosts the security of an area by increasing the number of people who are on the street. There are also substantial fiscal and economic benefits to municipalities, to developers, to businesses, and to residents. By concentrating growth in areas that already have water and sewer services, municipalities are able to reduce infrastructure maintenance costs while diversifying and growing their tax base. For businesses, compact mixed-use developments in close proximity to residential areas have been shown to attract more people and more shoppers. Recently, researchers from the International Council of Shopping Centers identified a significant consumer move to more pedestrian-friendly and transit-accessible stores, but away from more suburban and automobile-oriented mall areas. Compact development benefits the environment as well. It reduces the demand to develop open spaces in environmentally sensitive areas, and it reduces sprawl and traffic. Similarly, compact development helps preserve important agricultural lands and reduces development pressure on them. And the decreased use of cars, of course, reduces energy use, greenhouse gas emissions. And where car trips do occur, they generally tend to be shorter and thus less energy consuming and polluting as well. And this compact mixed-use development really the pedestrian-friendly nature of compact development that's been linked by medical research to more active and healthier lifestyles. The Development Focus Area Strategy has identified 16 development focus areas in Tompkins County. These were delineated by identifying those places where there is already a mix of housing and services and employment opportunities. And not surprisingly, most of these were locations that people already identify and cluster around. We also mapped areas where water and sewer facilities are available and identified their readiness for development based on the study that was undertaken by TCOG on the Intermunicipal Water and Sewer Feasibility Study. And we also mapped the location of bus routes, noticing frequency of service. And we identified four different types of focus areas. There's an urban center, which includes portions of the city of Ithaca, the towns of Ithaca and Lansing, in the villages of Cayuga Heights and Lansing. It's the largest of the development focus areas, and it's the historic employment, retail, service, and government center for the entire county. This area has a dense internal transit system, providing frequent opportunities for travel between destinations within the center. It also has water and sewer infrastructure and the greatest diversity of housing, business, and employment in the county. Now, nodes, whether established or emerging, also have public water and sewer systems capable of supporting dense and diverse development. There are five established nodes identified, and they already exist and have a mix of housing types, a wider diversity of businesses and services, and employment opportunities. All can support infill development, both residential and non-residential. And we also identified two emerging nodes, where there's at least some water and sewer infrastructure in place and the beginnings of a commercial or employment center. However, these two areas generally lack the mix of land uses that would make them fully function as nodes. And finally, the rural centers, we identified eight. Those, like the nodes, are walkable in size, and they do have a mix of residential, employment, and business services, although with less variety than the established nodes. However, there's a real critical difference between the nodes and the rural centers, and that is that the rural centers lack water and sewer infrastructure. Without this infrastructure, they can't support the same kind of intensity of development that is envisioned in the nodes. However, they do serve an important function as commercial and service centers for the surrounding rural populations. Implementing the strategy is really the key role is played by local governments. The county can help create the vision and provide support for municipal planning actions, but only local governments really have the authority to establish the legal framework to implement the strategy. The strategy has kind of five broad recommendations dealing with density and design, development regulations, infrastructure improvements, connections both within the various development focus areas and between the development focus areas, and controlling sprawl outside of the development focus areas. It is the vision of the strategy that at least two-thirds of all new development will occur in these development focus areas for the foreseeable future. This is roughly an inverse of what's happened in the past 50 years, where about two-thirds of new development is happening outside of our established communities, and one-third within them. So with careful planning, we think we can achieve this. These areas can attract the type and scale of development required to create lively places in which people will want to live. That's the big overview of the strategy. Turn it over to Leslie. I'll walk her.
Thanks, John.
I know we're later on the agenda, so I assume you'll have questions later.
Let's try to get both presentations out there, and then we'll do questions after.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Julie, I saw your hand already.
Okay. Thank you, everyone. Good evening. My name is Leslie Schill. I'm with the County Planning Department, here to, again, briefly discuss the conservation strategy draft that you should have in your folder that we have been working on for a while now in our office. I want to bring up that the conservation strategy is a long-term means for achieving conservation and protection of some of our best natural and agricultural resources in the county. That is the goal of the plan. And it proposes actions on sort of the next 10-year time frame. So what should we be focusing our efforts on in sort of immediate to long or to midterm? The conservation strategy grew out of the conservation plan, which was actually developed in two parts and has been in work since 2006, really. So the natural features focus area plan, you all may remember, it actually got finished in 2007, but we started reaching out to communities around the county. This came out of the geographies of both the two plans I'm about to talk about were both established in the county comprehensive plan, which was adopted in 2004, that identified some critical natural areas as well as agricultural areas in the county. I'll talk briefly about them and then zip into the strategy here. So in brief, the 14 natural features focus areas here, you can see these broad swaths that cover much of the county. These are areas that were defined, as it says here in the slide, because they had some really special natural resources. So whether it be gorges or it be unique natural areas, streams, areas that had special ecology, these areas were identified around the county as being very special. And so intense public outreach was done during this phase to reach out to almost 3,000 folks that even owned land on all of these properties to bring them in and talk to them. And a lot of analysis was done, and outcomes and findings came out of that plan that fed into this strategy. The next plan that was completed was in 2010. We actually began in 2009, reaching out to farmers around the county in these six areas that are defined here. Again, the geographies of these agricultural resource focus areas were developed and adopted in the county comprehensive plan. And they were really identifying not all farming that's happening in the county, and certainly not all successful farms in agricultural areas, but these are the areas where there were high concentrations of the prime and soils of statewide importance, as well as contiguous, actively farmed land. So where we really saw concentrations of that happening, where we want to make sure that we maintain these areas as really important farming areas of the future. And so in that process, we really got to sit down, have pie with farmers from around the county and talk to them about what are the issues, what do they think are opportunities, what do they need support with. And so bringing the outcomes of both of those plans together, we developed 11 recommended conservation strategy actions. I'll fly through this for you. So first, We're looking at developing a purchase of development rights implementation plan. So what this would entail is really actively marketing the state program for purchase of development rights, reaching out to those farmers that were in those six agricultural features focus areas and letting them know, A, this is even out there, this is a possibility for them. Letting them know that 1,800 acres of farmland is already protected through purchase of development rights in our county, and that 800 more are on the way, and three municipalities have worked through this process. It's not a quick process. Nobody would deny that it's a long work to do this, but it's something that keeps farmland in perpetuity, and so it's meaningful. We lost some verbiage here. Okay. So this one should say, I don't know where half the slide disappeared to, but this should say to explore the feasibility of a transfer of development rights program, hence the TDR there. The visual is correct, though. What we're looking at is the opportunity to transfer development rights from farmland to protect it in perpetuity, so farmers get paid to protect their land, and the development rights go to areas that are very nearby where you might be able to transfer their development rights to increase densities. And so this links back up to the presentation Joan just gave. If you can imagine farmland that's very near some of those development focus areas, you might be able to protect that farmland and immediately adjacent allow some more development in the areas that have been defined as that ripe for development. And so we would be looking for piloting that and reaching out to municipalities that are interested in seeing if it's feasible. There are a lot of requirements to make a TDR plan work, so we would have to work with municipalities to find out if there is opportunity there. Okay, so my presentation is zipping away from me because, again, there's another. Oh, here it comes. Okay. So looking at specific land use tools that are already out there that can support agriculture specifically here we're looking at. So right-to-farm opportunities, but also conservation zoning, agricultural zoning that really is mindful of the resources and protects it, as well as the first sketch there shows a conservation subdivision. So when subdivision comes in looking at how could you cluster the development and maintain a portion of the land in a more conserved, long-term sort of more of the land is kept in its natural state. Next, the next two actions came actually directly from farmers that we talked to. The first is to pilot an agricultural planning referral program. This is where, in talking to farmers, we found that there are needs out on their own farms where they identify some of the land they have is great, the soils are wonderful, some areas due to topography or soils or water location is not so great. But they would like some more specific expert help in helping them plan out their actual farm. And this also looks into sort of succession planning, but thinking about how they could best utilize their own farm in the long term to make sure it's very profitable. Next is to create an agricultural land lease program. So this would be to identify where there are farming lands available for lease. It seems pretty simple, but in talking to farmers, the picture of a farm, at least in my mind, changed dramatically in the course of reaching out to farmers. Most farms do not just consist of owned land. There are most farms include support lands that are rented. Some are nearby, which is very convenient. Some are very far away where, you know, trucking has to happen. Farm vehicles have to travel on roads to get to their support lands. It starts to become a bit of a patchwork. And so here you can see the different colors identify what's leased versus what's owned. And that's what that particular agriculture resource focus area looks at. So this would be to identify and to sort of catalog what's out there available to make it easy for farmers to access those properties when they're looking to expand, when they want support lands. And so looking at not necessarily the county being the lead on such a thing, but partnering with folks in the community that are agency experts in that. Next would be to engage landowners to participate in conservation programs. So there are a host of conservation programs out there. There are easement opportunities, and many people may not even know that they have a priority protection area identified on their land, particularly if the land has changed hands. So just really educating people on the opportunities that are out there. Reaching out to these folks, these are very precise priority protection areas that fell within those large swaths of the natural features focus area, as well as the agricultural feature focus area folks. Next is to develop the recreational trail network. Here's a picture of someone hiking the Finger Lakes Trail. What we're looking at here is really protecting some of the segments and completing some trail segments where there are gaps. So this is a a nice picture where you're out in a rural area, but in some cases you're on a harrowing stretch of highway. And so where can we make sure that those connections really occur to allow people the opportunity to get out and interact and take in some of our natural areas and appreciate those? And looking at where we have different trail networks, connecting those up and really creating something special. Promoting stream protection efforts across the board. The county has developed a stream protection program. We also have partners in the community that work consistently on stream protection efforts, such as soil and water. And so looking at the importance of stream buffers and what they offer for clean water, for water drinkability, for the ecology of the water, as well as for maintaining soil. And doing a little research, we noted there isn't even the baseline information we could really use to protect our wetlands and aquifer recharge areas better. And so this would include sort of cataloging wetlands, looking at the very small wetlands that are around. We know that those that are protected, DEC wetlands or the federal wetlands, they have different levels of protection. And so finding out what's out there. Some of the municipalities in the county have already begun to do this, so we think they're a model program. And then looking at our aquifer recharge areas. What are the extent of those areas? What's needed to make sure that we protect our water quality? Last was noted, that the heart of this community, Cayuga Lake, has wonderful opportunities, both recreationally. It provides our drinking water. It has gorgeous views. And it also supports wildlife. What can we do to make sure that people can access it? Right now, there are only 4 public access points from public parks, and we think that this may be too few to really allow people to get to and enjoy Cayuga Lake. And so we think that the Blue Way Trail project that's coming on, a tri-county project that's launching right now, really might identify some more opportunities. Likewise, protecting the views to and from the lake. So when you're on the lake looking up, view sheds, and then down into the lake, protecting, maybe having some more pull-offs along the Cayuga Lake Byway to really appreciate the views without, taking your life in danger by looking while you're driving. So protecting and enhancing those. Lastly, where does the money come from this? This was brought up by a partner in the community. You might need some money to do this. So we noted that a funding strategy is needed for particular priority acquisition. We imagine that much of the projects and the protections that will come underway will always be working with voluntary landowners and may well be with voluntary conservation easements. It's, even buying small pieces of land are quite expensive. But for those that come under critical need, whether because they offer something really special to the community or they offer a very special habitat or ecological benefit, to have a funding strategy for that into the future. We launch into, unlike the development focus area plan that Joan just presented, where municipalities are really the lead, we imagine this is really going to be a partnership program, that the conservation strategy can't be done by any one entity. We imagine that local municipalities partnering with conservation agencies, with partners, nonprofits in the community that already work on land protection, as well as working with individual landowners and those that are interested in conservation for the future, that we really need to come together and think about how to develop the leads on these projects and what kind of support mechanisms would be needed. And here are 2 maps all living together. So what Joan presented tonight, together with the agricultural features focus areas in crosshash and the green are the natural features focus areas. And I should say, we took these 2 presentations out and around the community because we thought these were really important to present together while municipalities, communities sit down and think about what they would like to see their communities look like in the future. These are really helpful tools for their planning. Are there particular areas they want to protect? Then they should think about where they want to develop. Are they more focused on development? That's great. So maybe the focus is on the development, and this helps them define where those development areas might be, where you would have less constraint, and so we think that in tandem, these can be very useful tools for municipalities.
Thank you so much, Leslie and Joan. Are there any questions? I'll start with Dooley.
Thank you. I got a kick out of your graphics, Leslie, because I didn't see them in the paper that we got.
Well, I've
got
to keep something interesting, right?
I actually have comment or questions for Joan's presentation. on behalf of the Village of Cayuga Heights, which is part of the urban area, but it should be possible to recognize it as a village in its own right on page 5, I think. And page 7, it would be good to indicate that it is actually developing its first comprehensive plan. You mentioned other municipalities. So that would be a nice mention. I was a little confused reading about the 14 lead items that you summarize in the text, but it isn't until you get to an appendix that you learn that those are out of date and lead has moved on to new development ones that are different. So I was puzzled by how that got treated. That's just a comment. And on page 19, where there are lists of occupations that can exist in different centers, there was nothing that listed fitness or exercise centers, and I think increasingly that's something that probably should be added to the list of what's allowed. These are just suggestions you don't have to answer. I'll give you some others not here. The last one is from Carol Chalk, who wanted to remind you that page 15, the example of Bell Sherman should probably be identified as Bryant Park. That's all. So if you can answer,
I'm trying to respond or to just not bother. So.
Well, with respect to, is it possible to include Cayuga Heights also as a village identifiable in its own right? That was an important one.
Not knowing the context of what the sentence says, if it's just talking about listing all the villages in the community, happily, but...
Well, the village of Cayuga Heights is really just identified as part of the urban center.
Similarly, the village of Lansing is not identified as its own separate focus areas. It's part of the urban center as a whole.
I know that.
Okay.
And they didn't ask me to say anything, but I'm reporting concerns.
Okay. Thank you. I can explain about a couple of them. Again, it depends on...
Go ahead.
So on the Bryant Park question, we'll take them in reverse order as my memory can deal with them.
That's packet page 49, if anybody's looking.
Oh, okay.
Plan
page 15, yes.
We used the terminology that we had a map that the City of Ithaca prepared that identified neighborhoods and neighborhood names, so we took that name directly from that map. I don't have any strong opinion on what it should be called. That's just the source of information we used. And it was just an illustrative example of density in one of our existing neighborhoods in the city. Excuse me.
Well, if I could interrupt you a moment. In terms of maps that are produced officially, there's a map of Tompkins County that talks about eastern Cayuga Heights, and there is no such place, really, officially. So anything that the city calls Bell Sherman, the neighborhood knows it as Bryant Park. That's all.
Again, I don't have a strong opinion, yeah. Second, you said that we had included a list of some examples of kinds of businesses that might be located in a focus area. It was not meant to be an exclusive list. It was just meant to give people a flavor of the kind of businesses we were talking about that would be appropriate in focus areas. I'm sure there are probably an easy dozen more we could add without any controversy. But fitness centers would be one that would make sense to include.
Don't worry about the other.
Oh, the lead one, the lead changed completely how they do.
I know.
We tried to apply their new standards, and it ended up they would only include one small area of the City of Ithaca as meeting their definition of a suitable area for neighborhood development. It excluded virtually the entirety of the county, so we went with their older definition that at least had some relevance to Tompkins County.
Maybe it would be good to say that in so many words, then.
Okay. Mike?
Well, first let me say this is excellent work product. Really is the kind of thing that our planning department does so well when it does studies. But having said that, I don't know as I really am on board with a lot of things that are in here. And I'm glad you mentioned the fact that it has to be the towns and villages and city that make decisions about their land use. I worry that we may be
crossing the line a little bit. And what most of the villages and towns and cities, in my view, over my experience in local government, don't want to have is the view that the county is imposing requirements, plans, other things, telling them how they should zone, how they should have for their populations the land use being used. For example, the villages, and I pick the villages because I am formerly in village government. And, you know, it may be very well true that the villages don't want to be densified. One of the reasons that people choose to live in villages and hamlets is because they like the rural, slower character. They don't want to have a lot of apartment buildings, necessarily. And to say that we're going to do that because they have chosen to have a sewer plant and a water plant nearby, I think is something we have to be very, very careful about saying to them. The purchase of development rights, I worry about, because what they can do, and I'm seeing that happen in Dryden, they can surround a village and moribund it for tax base and other things. I don't think that purchase of development rights should ever be considered unless they are controlled by an elected board, a town or a village or something like that. I don't think they should be controlled by private not-for-profits or whatever. We talk about sprawl, and sprawl is that evil that the planners like to mention. I don't think Tompkins County is experiencing inordinate sprawl. I never have. We have more forest land in Tompkins County now than after World War II. Yes, there is growth, a small, moderate growth. And there's problems with densification as well. I think it was Dooley Kiefer who coined the term, at least the first I ever heard, of vertical sprawl. And when you densify in existing urbanized areas, you run the risk of having real, very expensive infrastructure problems, not only with water and sewer and gas and communication lines that you're trying to put in old streets, but also the lack of room for people to travel. If anybody who's been in downtown Ithaca this past summer, including through the Apple Festival, knows what happens when you get a little construction going and the traffic around the commons. So I've got some problems here with this, and I don't have a problem with the work that the planning department has done. I think they've done what we've asked them to do. But I think that we have to be very careful and not tread on the rights and land use of the other municipalities.
Joan and then Ed and then Peter, Pam, and Will.
All right. I won't speak to the PDR of the people who worked on the conservation strategy. I'll let that. I will talk a little bit about the development focus area strategy and its relationship to local governments. Several months ago, after we developed the first draft of this strategy, I made an offer to every municipality that I was willing to go out and talk to them about it and to listen to their comments and concerns. I was invited to several communities, not all, but several. They suggested and asked for changes, and then to a large extent, we accommodated virtually all of them. This was never meant to be us telling the communities what to do. It came, one of the reasons we undertook this study, not the only reason, but one of the reasons, is when the comprehensive plan talked about concentrating development and following the patterns of villages and hamlets in the city, communities asked us, how can we make that happen? Well, that's in part the development focus area strategy was in part a response to their question about how can you make that happen. We gave a little bit more, put them in a little more flesh on the bones of what kind of policies are needed. And I will say that the recommended densities that we have included, we gave some examples, really replicate existing densities in urban areas and in villages and in the hamlets. We are not really recommending densities way beyond what we already see in this community.
Ed
wanted to know.
I really want to kind of stress that in both of these strategies, we are attempting to implement the policies that were adopted by this legislature when you approved the county comprehensive plan. So there's nothing new here. In fact, it's just trying to flesh it out, like Joan said, so the communities can understand what the opportunities are to be more proactive if they want to be in making some of these things happen. The first meeting that we had about the development focus area strategy a couple of years ago now, that was the overwhelming response from the local government planners and other people there was, tell us, give us more tools to do and more idea about how we do this. So that's where it's coming from. And it clearly is voluntary upon municipalities as to what they do with this. We think it's a good idea for them to consider these things. They have to decide whether it is for themselves and take whatever action they will take. And it is, we think this plan actually will help communities in this county, if they do want to follow it, to comply with New York State law, which now requires that state investments be made in accordance with smart growth strategies. And the community needs to, they have to make a review of whether these investments in roads or other things the state is putting money into are in accordance with a smart growth strategy. If you don't have one, it's going to be hard to make that case. So we think this would actually help communities access state resources. We've been very careful, I think, in both of these strategies to emphasize that we don't have any of the control at the county level on most of these things. We are partners with communities that want to be partners on pursuing them, and that these provide some guidance, and we really do believe it will make for a better quality of life for everybody in the community. There are many housing units in all sorts of different settings in this county, and there will always continue to be. But the reality of the market today, in terms of what people needs for young people and older people are, as well as trends, suggest that this is actually what's in more demand, more compact development. In many cases, the density we're talking about is really what villages originally were. And what they did is suburbanize during the 60s and 70s and start increasing the minimum lot sizes and increasing things that were out of character with the original village scale. And so we're trying to return in many ways to what was there before. So, and in terms of the conservation strategy, again, purchase of development rights is always voluntary. In every case we've used it so far in this county, it has been with a municipal partner, and I would anticipate that would be the case. In some cases, the municipality has taken it completely on themselves to pursue it. So this is, I think as Mike said, it's probably best done that way, and that's the way it has been done to date in Tompkins County.
Okay, I've got Peter, Pam, and then Will.
Yeah, just a brief comment. I have heard a lot about planning and how we meet the need for more housing and how we're gonna regulate the growth of the community. When I was on the town board, then here, I mean that's what mostly the town board talks about. And I've been on the Town of Ithaca Comprehensive Plan Committee now for about 3 years or something like that. And that's really where my acquaintance with these issues comes from. And it was interesting. Yesterday, I drove to Albany and back, and in the morning I stopped at the Dryden Cafe, which is what we always do, to sit down for one of their delicious scones. If you've never tried that, it's worth going to. It's one of the best scones in the county.
That's true.
And I ran into Mike and his staff, and we sat down with them and started to talk a little bit about this issue. And I heard what Mike just said for the first time at that meeting. And I found it quite interesting, because in all of the times I've talked about, I participated in discussions about planning and how we regulate growth, we were only given two options. One option was sprawl, and the other option was growth in the existing hamlets or cities. And that's how I construed of things, as that's what we have to do, either choose one or the other. And it just never occurred to me until that discussion I had with Mike and his staff that really there's a third option, that might fit the needs of a community that didn't want growth, that said, well, we want Dryden or I don't know what, to maintain exactly the way it is at the moment. And that's the construction of new Drydens or new nodes or something like that without disturbing the old, but on the other hand, not causing sprawl. I just never heard that way of looking at it presented, so I thought it was very intriguing. I have nothing to add, but it seemed to me that's something that we might think about sometime.
Well, I think the strategy contemplates some of what you've talked about. Certainly the town of Lansing has indicated the desire for a new town center, and the plan, the strategy reflects that in accordance with their plans. And in fact, I think you'd be hard-pressed to find direct conflicts between this strategy and any municipal plan that's been adopted that I'm aware of. The goals are virtually the same if you read the plans. Now, they may not always implement them completely, but that's really what their plans say their goals are, by and large. So, we did include conservation subdivision in our conservation strategy to recognize that there will be development in rural areas, but you can do it in a way that's more protective of the resources of those areas.
Pam?
Yes, I'm somebody who has spent a lot of time thinking about planning, and during my time on City Council, I always was on the Planning Committee. And if we don't plan, then we get what we get. And I think that the pressure for planning comes from growth. And if you are not willing to face that fact and deal with the possibility of growth and where you want growth and where you don't want growth, then you're going to have growth that is willy-nilly. And I think that Newfield has the best example right now, where they have almost no zoning, and they want to build a garbage transfer station in a neighborhood. So it can take a lot of different turns. But I think that being involved in planning, I have seen that it has never made sense to me that we have a comprehensive plan that historically that was developed by the city and by the town and that by other municipalities spreading out, and that they were not done in conjunction with each other or in coordination with each other, so that the development that comes along doesn't necessarily make any sense. And I think that once again that what the county has done with its comprehensive plan has taken the big picture, has said, look, this is, talking to all the municipalities, this is generally where you want to be, and this, so this plan reflects those things that your municipality wants and what as a county we want. I think that the idea that we are not just planning for ourselves, we are planning for our children and our grandchildren and the generations to come, that we want farmland in our county, that we don't want houses built on every single square inch of land just because it's it has a beautiful view. The fact is the field that is sitting there empty or with crops or with animals is equally as beautiful for all of us to enjoy. So I think that it requires us to be thoughtful about this and to spend the time and resources to make it happen. So I would completely agree with you, Mike, if this plan forced municipalities to develop and increase their density at all. Land use planning is a something that each municipality has, and they don't have to follow this plan at all. But what this offers us in this continuing effort and development and refinement of this plan is that it gives us a framework that we can all look at and say, yes, this makes sense, that we're going to have more housing in here, we're going to have greater numbers of people here as the pressure comes for development. Remember, this is all coming from pressure to develop. So it is something that I was so excited when I got on the county legislature to see that we had the kind of planning department that would take hold of this thing and make it work. So now I will get off my soapbox. Thank you.
Thanks, Pam. Will?
Wow, Pam just took about 99% of what I was going to say, but thank you, Pam. You said it beautifully. Yeah, we are charged with having the big picture. we do not have the power. You know, I too was on the town board. I spent a lot of time dealing with planning issues, and as anybody who's been through that, they can be very contentious and divisive within communities. But, you know, that is their responsibility. Our responsibility, though, is hopefully to present a larger vision, and I think our planning staff has done an extraordinary job in these two documents, and I hope everybody's had a chance to at least look at them. They are not directive. You know, they create this vision, present some tools, and the alternative of us walking away or turning our back on it will literally to be just to let random market forces, I think, happen. I mean, Mike, you questioned the whether sprawl was truly the evil or what it exactly meant, and I certainly it can take many different forms, but the dominant form that I've seen here in Thompson County is where you don't have any conscious attempt to figure out how to develop your communities is just endless small-scale individual actions on road frontage that just gobbles up, you know, mile after mile. And it ultimately is not leading to, I think, the kind of communities or physical environment that we want to live in. So I strongly hope that we will pass this tonight, and it's going to be a work in progress. I'm sure there will be, the real implementation is going to happen at the municipal level, but I think this provides our vision.
Thank you. Thank you, Will. I'm going to come back to you in a few minutes to actually make these motions. So I think rather than have it do this later, let's stay on the topic and deal with the resolutions. I have Frank, Pat, and I'd like to add something.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Some of you know I've spoken about both of these programs at the Planning Committee, and I've spoken to Ed and Leslie and Joan about them certainly over the last several months as these have worked their way through the committees. And I, too, am impressed with the work. I mean, there's no doubt about it that it's taken a lot of time and a lot of effort. It's interesting that Ed reminds us of the comprehensive plan because some of us remember the one vote against that plan. And I support certain parts of it too, but it was the land use section of the comprehensive plan that I was at that time and still very much concerned about. And I echo a lot of Mike's concerns about local municipalities directing their own future. I'm glad in both the presentations that there's emphasis on making sure that the municipalities understand that a lot of these pieces, if not all of them, are voluntary in one manner, shape, or form. Central planning has never been on the top of my list, and it's interesting to hear some that have graduated from Cornell in the planning department, although it's no surprise, with degrees in planning speaking in favor of this. But their names will go unmentioned, right? Never mind. The concern that I have is regardless of which way this vote goes on accepting or implementing or adopting or whatever, the county charter and the administrative manual, particularly with the planning department, indicate that the planning department has an obligation to assist municipalities in planning. If they're asked, they should help. And I was glad that Ed reminded us that they're available to help out. One of the questions, regardless of which direction this takes, we have control over how much money we allocate to help the planning department do that. And some of us go back to a time when we had a circuit rider in the planning department that used to literally go around and help in that capacity. There was even a time when time was bought by the various towns in participation with the planning department to help out. The concern that I have is financial. There's mention in both of these, but particularly the the conservation strategy, that a financial plan, and Leslie, I can't remember the exact wording, but it's, I think it's bullet 11. That says that a method for paying for some of this has to be developed, and it involves, as Leslie outlined, a lot of players in the community, including, it could be municipalities and us. When the plans were presented, particularly the conservation plan was presented to the Ag and Farmland Protection Board, Scott Doyle, who's an appointed member from the Planning Department, did take back some of the comments that that board made and incorporated them into that plan. We didn't spend a lot of time, with all due respect, Joan, on the focus area one because we'd had that presentation some time ago. We did ask Ag and Markets to comment on the plan, and a copy of it was sent to Ag and Markets at the request of the Ag and Farmland Protection Board. And comments were received, and last Wednesday when they were reviewed, not all of the comments were damning by any stretch of the imagination, but there were a couple of places where they asked for expansion of certain items. Scott was given a copy of that. They were annotated in the copy that we received. I honestly don't know if they've been incorporated or not, but I think there was some mention of a, maybe quite by happenstance, but Leslie may have hit some of them tonight when she went over them. They weren't bad comments, but there were a couple of places where they expressed a concern about expanding, particularly the funding part of a couple of the programs that you were discussing, or the items in the bullet points that you were discussing. My concern is the effect of going into a community and suggesting that certain things happen. I mentioned this at the Planning Committee meeting, and it's no secret I was the lone no vote against the comprehensive plan. My concern is that if funding, all of us are paying taxes on a 100% of market value, regardless of what town we represent or municipality or whatever, the concern that I have financially is that while some of the plans identify certain areas and for help in certain areas, the only public infrastructure in two of the three towns that I represent are Ithaca and Danby. The only public water supply is in West Danby. I don't know if that changes the tax base or not, but if the county is going to encourage or work with or direct certain things to happen in certain parts of the community, what's in it for a town like Caroline or Danby, who are contributing tax-wise on an equal basis, with all due respect, Pat, as a town like Lansing, which is, in my opinion, needs some planning because it needs some direction with, because they're growing so fast, that I understand Jonathan Cantor is helping them positively, helping them with that. But does a town like Caroline, who doesn't have the central infrastructure, do they get left holding the bag, so to speak, because they're contributing tax-wise, but they're not getting some help?
Okay, Frank,
I'd like to finish, Martha, if you don't mind. The other towns are in the same boat, and I'm not totally convinced that this is the right direction for us to go in, although I think that the plans would be made available to help any municipality that wants to use them as a guide can certainly jump in and do that, whether or not they're approved, because they provide some guidance in certain areas. The stream bank setbacks, Caroline is water rich, and my concern about those tributaries in Six Mile Creek and some of the larger ones coming down through Danby I want to make sure that those towns get fair representation, particularly with the funding. So I'm a little bit concerned, as you all know, about the direction that these may take us. Thanks, Martha.
Go ahead, and then Pat.
Yeah, I think there's just two things I'd like to respond to. One is the referral to Ag and Markets. It was reviewed by one staff person at Ag and Markets who made a number of comments, none of which were in any way negative. I wouldn't say they weren't. They certainly weren't damning. There weren't none of them that were in any way negative.
Right.
They were basically saying, oh, yeah, we would like to help you do this, or we can help with this, is basically what the nature of the comments from Ag and Markets were. So they didn't change anything substantive in there because they didn't suggest any substantive change. In terms of, you know, equity amongst communities, our assistance, every community would be eligible for assistance. Every community has at least a rural center in it. It may be a place where we can help a community with planning for that area. Certainly all of the communities have conservation priorities, and every single comprehensive plan that's been done by any community has typically had conservation of the natural resources as the thing the public rated the highest as their priority. And so these plans both will be available, and staff will be available to work with any community. On the infrastructure side, most of the rural communities have decided that they don't want to invest in public infrastructure where they don't already have it, or they would be pursuing it, and they aren't, because the people don't want it. And they don't want that kind of development. That's fine. Our plan reflects that reality. And in fact, one place, the village of Freeville, was one place where we thought it might be a focus area. And Joan going out and talking with them, they said, no, we have sewer. We don't want to put in public water. The people don't want it. We'd rather stay a rural center. So they became a rural center in this focus strategy. And so we've listened very hard and looked at the comprehensive plans. We see every change that's made to any local comprehensive plan comes through our office. We read them. We're aware of what people are thinking and saying. And I think we really work hard to be in sync with the other communities, but also to try to have a little bit of vision looking forward in terms of the broader community interest.
I got Pat and myself and then Jim and then Peter.
Yes, thank you. I want to thank you, Mike, for your candor and your comments about the reservations that local municipalities may have in regards to land use planning and the role of the county in that whole process, because it's very real. You mentioned the town of Lansing and its efforts to establish a town center, and I think that provides a good illustration of one of the reasons why that happens, in that it's true that the town of Lansing does not have good planning resources. Recently, they have hired on contract a planner to assist them with their process, but prior to the time that that happened, when they were trying to figure out where they were going to place their sewer, they came up with a plan which they felt was very viable and which suited their needs. The municipality supported it, but because the county would not approve of it, they were unable to go out and get approval for the funding that they needed to implement that plan. So the town was required to amend their plan to conform with what the county would approve of. And I think that's a good example of what can happen in a rural community when there this inherent tension arises between what the county views as an appropriate planning process versus what a municipality may determine is in their best interests. So I don't want to dismiss that concern, and I have talked with Ed and people in the planning department enough to understand that and be fully supportive of the goals of this plan. I think that it represents a tremendous amount of very, very good effort. I think it has very many really good things in it, but I do not want to understate the degree to which there is concern out there in our communities about the roles of the two places, the county and the municipalities. I am wondering if there is some way to include a statement in this that addresses that issue, in the sense of being able to say to the local municipalities, this is what the county has adopted, this is what we think meets the best goals of planning for our community, but in the instance where there might be a difference between the county and a municipality, that the municipality clearly, by law, has the right to make its own decisions about planning, land use, and that the county would then support what it is that the local municipality wishes to do. I don't know if that's possible or not. I also recall from past budget discussions that when we talked about the program for the planning department for the year, that cutting back on services to localities is one of the places that got cut back in the budget. And I would very much hope to see that restored to a level where there can be the kind of collaboration that I think needs to happen between our local municipalities and our county planning department. I think it's in the best interest of all of us to see that happen.
Okay, I'm going to take a minute here. I would remind us all that we do have a legal authority on the 239 review, that we have a mechanism in state law that says that the county planning department is required to review projects that have intermunicipal importance, and then it's not that we tell a municipality they can't do something.
That's right.
It's that in order to do something different than what's been recommended, they need a supermajority on the town board. So I think it is a constant kind of back and forth. I want to just say what I think is very strong about both these documents and about our county planning department's efforts in general is the preservation of choice, is that this is in no way saying that all growth is going to happen a certain way. And in terms of process and in product, I feel that there's a great deal of respect for the different kinds of development that happen in different communities. I mean, you just travel around the county and you see the village of Trumansburg is very different from what's happening in Newfield or in the village of Dryden, and all different from what's happening in the city of Ithaca. So I think that's a strength of our community, but I also think that we should recognize that we're a job center. We're a job center for surrounding counties. And more people want to live here than right now can afford to or can find places that they would choose to live in available at a reasonable price. So this is a way to really, I think the word vision was put out there, and I think that's what this is. Just a final anecdote. I think you remember the oddest things. I remember at the 2000 census, after there was some analysis of the 2000 census, there was an article in the Ithaca Journal that said between 1990 and 2000, the population of Tompkins County grew something like 2%. The amount of land that we used up, the amount of land that was occupied, that was built on, grew by something like 24%. And maybe one of you knows the real numbers there, but it was that order of magnitude. That's sprawl. And it may feel like, well, it's not really relevant because it still only takes 15 minutes to get sort of anywhere in town. But as we look to the future, the more we have to drive individual cars to get places, the worse off we are as a community and as individuals. The more land we soak up, if we don't plan carefully, the worse off we are as a community. So I think that's the vision here is a very respectful way to go about that, and I appreciate all the work that's been done. I've got Jim, Peter, and then Frank, and then maybe we can go to Will.
I will pass, Martha.
Okay, Peter.
Yeah, I'd like to respond to what Frank said, which is an issue that I've heard about a lot, both when I was on the town board and on the legislature, namely, what is the role of the legislature? Should a legislature be giving money to one part of the county when they don't give money to another part of the county. Is that fair? What is equity here? And I remember spending many hours with my old friend Maria Coles in the city, where Maria took the position that it was a vast unfairness to the city that she pays taxes, the city pays taxes for the sheriff's office and gets zero service from them. What kind of fairness is that? Shouldn't the legislature give a third of the money that they put into the public safety and in cash to the city to fund their IPD because they don't use the sheriff's office? And, it has a sound of some ring of fairness to it. But if you do that, then, in fact, if you take the extreme position that the county must fund every township or every municipality in it at a rate which is proportional to their population, then there's no point for the county. Then all the county is a thing that distributes money it takes from people and gives it back to them. To the extent that our lives depend on what goes on, our enjoyment of life is dependent on parts of the county that we don't live in, namely that the city is important to the quality of life of people who live in the town and so forth, and that the wave of the future is regional planning, that we have to think of ourselves as a region. Our region is, the beauty of our region is Cayuga Lake and the lands that surround it, and we have to think of preserving that for everybody. Even those people who don't border on Cayuga Lake. And the same thing about the health of the city. And there's 1,000 other situations that go like that. And to my mind, the notion of counting every nickel and dime and trying to make a ledger sheet to show that the county taxes have been proportionately given to the communities is a bad mistake. I like what goes on in planning for the county and looking at it as a region. And frankly, I think there should be more of it rather than less of it.
Okay, before I go to Frank, folks in the audience waiting for the broadband discussion, there's some good news and some bad news. We're going to get to you, I would say, we're going to do Resolution K so that Frank Krupa can go home. We're also going to, but after that, we're going to skip the other reports and go directly to the broadband resolution. We're going to do two resolutions related to these planning issues, and we're going to take a 10-minute break. So if you want to do a rough calculation, we're at least 15 minutes, probably 20 minutes at least, away from the broadband discussion if you want to actually go get a cup of coffee or something. Frank, and then I'd like to go to Will.
Thanks, Martha. Ed, I appreciate the comment about equity. And I certainly endorse what you said about ag and markets. And as I said before, they didn't come out and damn any part of the report. They had some suggestions that we could beef it up in certain ways. Peter, in my estimation, equity does not mean spending the same amount of money in every single town. It means simply that you recognize that in order to You can't just help one municipality out at the expense of another municipality, that there's an opportunity, and it may come at different times. It doesn't mean that every year you divvy up whatever Joe saves on the budget. My concern, and I want to ask Ed a question, that's why I wanted to come back to me. Thanks, Martha. The smart growth question. You said, if I remember right, that the state would be, the state is encouraging funding of those communities or would look favorably on those communities that recognize smart growth. If the county has a responsibility, let's say through planning, to help those communities, regardless of the status of these two draft plans, I can't imagine us not helping a community out if there was some funding through a smart growth initiative at the state level. That planning wouldn't help a municipality out achieve what it needs in order to get that funding. It's a long question.
I would say, yes, we would help them out. I mean, obviously there are going to be things there could be things, I don't think that's been our experience, but there could be something a municipality would propose to do that would really not, in our opinion, be a positive thing for the larger community. And I don't think the county is obligated to be party to something that maybe is not positive, or it could be directly negative to a neighbor, for example. Those things come up. So I can't say in a blanket statement we would always help any community with anything they would suggest, but generally we try to assist whatever we can.
Because I'm going back to something Pat mentioned about the that there was a discussion about, I think Pat said sewer proposal or something where the Lansing had to amend its request in order to achieve what the county wanted, if I understood Pat right.
Well, I don't know if we want to get into the details of these kinds of discussions, but I know in that case one of the properties involved was one the Ag and Farmland Protection Board was also concerned about.
Because of the responsibility of the Ag and Farmland Board is to preserve agriculture, and if something is coming up, and it was the sewer line going through Lansing, if the impact of that sewer line would detrimentally affect the agricultural property, it's our obligation to bring that up and let Ag and Markets or whoever it was know that. But based on some of the controls, I've heard tonight the word zoning mentioned. Even though a town like Caroline does not have zoning, and I assume this is true in Newfield also, which also doesn't have zoning, there are regulations in place that every single... We have tacit zoning anyway, because we have to comply with the health department regs. You can't go willy-nilly and put a septic system in, whether it's for a 50-unit development or your own home. You need approval by the health department to do it a certain way. You have to be a certain distance from a well, for instance. Those regs already exist. Ag and Markets law right now, Part 301, if I'm not mistaken, and 25AA and AAA, there are regulations about agriculture that trump zoning, for those of you that may not deal with that all the time. So there are regs in place that have to be complied with, whether or not there's a plan or no plan, that really do take effect. To assume that you can just build anything you want on any piece of ground is not, I mean, that's not enough of a reason to support this. If you're in favor of this, you should support it.
Okay. Jim, did you have your hand up?
How many people are for down growth?
I would like to suggest that when I go to Will, and I would like to ask that we keep our discussion relevant to the resolutions themselves, and I think we've had a good broad-ranging discussion, but let's try to focus on starting with Resolution F, which is on packet page 25, if you have lost your place.
Okay, thank you. And I would like to bring forth Resolution F, which is endorsing the Tompkins County Development Focus Areas Strategy, and I so move.
Seconded by Pam. Will.
I just wanted to see... if maybe Ed would give us an answer to the question that Pat raised, which is, would it be possible to communicate sort of the meaning of these in a way to the municipalities, and either within the documents or by a cover letter or something?
We certainly could put that in a cover letter communicating to the municipalities that this was endorsed by the legislature, and recognize we're asking to endorse, not adopt. It's a little bit different word and less strong word than adopt. What I wouldn't probably suggest to do is putting in the document or anywhere a statement that we would always support whatever a municipality decides to do, because I think there are probably going to be times when the county might not want to support everything a municipality would want to do. So that I would probably fall short of that. But recognizing the authority of municipalities under state law and the role of the county being distinctly different, I certainly would be supportive of that.
Thank you.
I don't want to prolong this, but I'm not sure exactly what action you were talking about, Pat, but I remember being part of conversations where the town of Lansing wanted the county to pay for,
yeah.
You know, millions of dollars toward the sewer. It wasn't just permission for,
no.
for the town to go out and get the money. So
that wasn't it.
Okay. All right. Okay. Any yes, Pat?
I'm not asking for any particular wording changes, but I would be very appreciative of something in a cover letter that would reflect what Ed just said. That would be helpful, I think.
Okay. Great.
I'd be happy to make sure that happens, Pat.
Thank you. Any other discussion? All right. Ready to vote on Resolution F? All in favor, please raise your hand. Opposed? 1, 2, 3. I think I missed somebody then. That corner is so bad. Can I ask for...
Could I ask for a roll call vote, please?
All right.
This is the focus area.
Yep. It's F. F for focus area.
Mr. Robinson?
No.
Mr. Stein?
Yes.
Mr. Burbank?
Yes.
Mr. Dennis?
Yes.
Ms. Kiefer?
Yes.
Mr. Lane?
No.
Ms. McAsey?
Yes.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Yes.
Mr. McKenna?
No.
Mr. Proto?
Changed my mind. No.
Ms. Pryor?
Yes.
Ms. Robertson?
Yes.
8 ayes, 4 noes.
I don't know if somebody would challenge the vote that was changed, but okay. All right, 8 ayes, that passes. Thank you very much. Resolution G.
Okay, I would like to now introduce Resolution G, which is endorsing the Tompkins County Conservation Strategy, and I so move.
Seconded by Dooley. And, Will, I'm sorry, now I've lost it. Which page?
That would be packet page 60.
Okay. Discussion?
Please.
What?
Please?
Okay, I want a roll call vote.
Mr. Robinson?
No.
Mr. Stein?
Aye.
Mr. Burbank?
Yes.
Mr. Dennis?
Yes.
Ms. Kiefer?
Yes.
Mr. Lane?
No.
Ms. McAsey?
Yes.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Yes.
Mr. McKenna?
No.
Mr. Proto?
No.
Ms. Pryor?
Yes.
Ms. Robertson?
Yes.
We have 8 ayes, 4 noes.
All right, so those pass. Thank you very much for all this work. This is extremely well done, and we really appreciate it. Thank you for the vision for Tompkins County. Before we break, with great sympathies to Frank Krupa, I'm going to ask Frank Proto to bring up Resolution K, which is packet page 87.
I'll just read the title off the agenda, Martha.
Yeah.
Resolution K, ID 3645, authorization to amend the capital program, appropriate rollover funds for the purchase and implementation of an environmental health permit management program. And I so move.
Second by Mike. Discussion. Okay, this requires
10 votes
because it's an amendment to the capital program, and we need a short roll call.
Mr. Robinson?
Yes.
Ms. Pryor?
Yes.
Would anyone wish to be recorded as no? That's unanimous. Okay. Thank you, Frank. And Frank,
Thank you.
I'd like us to take a 10-minute recess and be back in your seats, please, at 10 of 8. Thank you.
Thanks, Martha, for moving that up.